Hey, welcome to Meat House. I'm going to leave this show here because Jeff needs to catch his breath here. He had a bit of a cough. It's summer weather. The pollens are out. It's kind of hurting us both a little bit. But right now, I'm clearer than he is, which is odd.
The pollen is, the pollen is there. The pollen is everywhere. Same with the yeast. And it's, look under a microscope. It's fucking wild.
Yeah, don't. It's not fun. But welcome to Meat House. Glad to have you here. Jeff, how you doing now?
I'm breathing. That's the plus, I'm about to be drinking. So that's
even bit plus, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So today we have a kind of a banner topic. We're talking about making meads fast because it is summertime.
Yeah.
And this is the time of year where we can do some tweaks and we can do some fun stuff. So let's look ahead and let's play with that because we can do the Norwegians have given us a gift in the form of Kvike yeast. There are other stuff we can play with, but Kvike is raising that bar so high.
And he told me a little bit about this. I can't wait to get into this thing. Before we start, I want to thank all of our listeners here for coming and listening to us again. We love every single one of you. Appreciate your comments. We'd like to meet you at some point someday. Yeah. We really appreciate you being here with us. Talking mead, trying to make a better mead and extend our community.
In the meantime, yeah, feel free to reach out to us either on Facebook, you know where to find us, or drop us line info@themeathouse.com. We're great to talk to there. Tell us what you want to talk about, what you want to hear us talk about. There is never a shortage of topics to talk about, but, the fact that you guys reach out to us and say, hey, I found XYZ topic you talked about a week ago real useful, or hey, that actually gave me some food for thought for a problem that I've been having.
Or even the, hey, can you tell me about this?
Right. We love it. We love the audience interaction. We are so appreciative of you guys reaching out and doing what you do. And we would love to encourage it even more. So please, please do.
And secondly, we have Bacchus and Barleycorn, our sponsor.
Yes.
They are great people. Jake and his team there, actually extraordinary people. Always looking to raise the bar out there, make better beers, wines, meads, and even cheese, kombucha, and yogurt.
Yeah, any kind of microbially fermented product. So they've got a line on how to do that.
They're pretty locked into this thing. I'm really happy to be a part of it. Been friends with them for a long time. Jeff used to work there, and the knowledge they have imbued has been spectacular.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And hey, not only do they have the equipment, the products, what you need, they keep their prices very competitive, and they're even more competitive if you use our promo code, MHP10. 10. Thank you.
Yeah, breathing is important. MHP10 is the way you get 10% off your online orders. Tell them, it lets them know that you're actually listening to us. Gives a little bit of props and lets them know that their sponsorship is not going to waste.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So thank you to Bacchus and Barleycorn. And so
today we're talking about fast mead.
Right.
And specifically a certain yeast that will help us do this effectively.
Super fast, actually. And, I also, was it a week ago we were talking about weird things you see in online recipes? One of the weird online recipes, and I don't like to talk smack about people. I know Joe's Ancient Orange has its place, it has its reason. It does not make a good mead, but it makes a mead, and the why I can understand. The since then, where everybody has been sharing it and resharing it, and everyone has cutting your teeth on Joe's Ancient Orange has been a thing. No. As long as we're talking about Kvike, instead of talking about Joe's Ancient Orange, let's talk about Jeff's Modern Orange. That's a recipe I'll be sharing with you. You can start with the Mead House 12% and go from there. There's going to be a couple of changes to the recipe, requirements. But we will.
Before we get into that, though, a friend of mine started a new job, and his trainer at that new job mentioned his wife likes wine, so he gave him a mead from him. And the woman loved his mead, and this was Bryant. She turned his mead into a strawberry preserve, which we got a sample of here. So we're going to give that a try here and see what she did with a made mead and a strawberry in a strawberry preserve. So, first of all, it's deep in color. And, oh my gosh, it's good.
Yeah, very good. I mean, we're just eating this on a little bit of rosemary bread. That's very nice. I mean,
got bakery bread for it.
And oh my gosh, the strawberry on that overwhelms the raspberry, the rosemary in the bread.
Oh yeah. And the mead you can taste the mead in the strawberry
It has that, you know, that honey kind of flavor to the mead. The strawberry is dense. There's a lot of strawberry in this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I don't know what she did. Good stuff. But thank you, Brian, for sharing that with us.
Absolutely. It's always nice to see extra stuff you can do with mead other than just, you know, drink it and enjoy it.
And I'll be honest, I gave my daughter a heads up on that. She's going to see if she can make a recipe for that to put in the book we're making.
That is a very nice thing to have in there. Yeah, for sure. I have heard of a number of jellies and jams and things made with things like champagne and of that sort.
And actually, there's the Beautiful Day Farm, you can look it up online, has a number of alcoholic-infused jellies and jams. And they do not sponsor. They're just good people I like a lot. I spent a lot of time with them. I've bought a lot of their jams, to be honest. Oh, my God. I have an entire shelf in my kitchen, my pantry dedicated to just their jellies. And, yeah, they're good stuff. But, yeah, give them a look up.
So, on the topic of trying things, let's, we're having a very orange flavored episode today. We've got a Melomel from Van Wyck
Meadery. Now, this is the mead I got when I was at a Renaissance Festival in Des Moines, Iowa, not long ago, about 3-4 weeks ago. And they had like 7, 8, 9, 10 kinds of mead there. There were just a lot. Elderberry, peach, blackberry, just a bunch.
Yeah.
The one that I brought with us is actually blood orange. So I want to give a shout out to Van Wyck. And Van Wyck?
Van Wyck.
Wyck? I think it's Van Wyck. I had to ask him that, and my memory is failing me already. But it's
11%. We haven't started drinking yet.
Well, maybe that'll help. But Van Wyck, and it's a blood orange mead, 11%. He let me taste a lot of. He had a tasting area in his meads. Stellar meads, really good. If you get a chance, I recommend you give him a shout out, give it a try, because they're pretty good meads. So the one I have here is, well, in a word, orange.
Yeah, it's kind of a light orange, kind of a peachy color, I would say.
Yeah, a little darker than peachy, but yeah, I'll go with that. Yeah,
medium peach, maybe medium peach. Yeah, you know, light in color, light in body. Doesn't look like it really has legs to it, but, you know, at 11%, that's totally fine.
I'm not getting a lot of smell of it myself, but I'm also kind of, it's the season. I'm kind of plugged up. What do you got?
There's a light orange aroma to it. Okay. Not a lot of honey. A little bit of, like, fruity ester and then the yeasty kind of character to it.
But I kid you not, the taste, pretty darn good.
Yeah, that's orange.
That's orange.
That's just orange. It's not orange juice. It's orange cocktail. But, I mean, like, when you're making a margarita, you get, like, the Contro or the Grand Marnier or the orange liqueur or whatever.
Yeah, is that it?
Yeah, this is pretty much.
This is blood orange. This is just good.
Yeah.
But I wanted to give a shout out to Van Wyck. They're exceptional people I got to meet. He's very passionate about making good meads. His only goal in his life is not to get awards or medals or competition. He wants to make a stellar mead. He wants to make one kind. He did it.
And these guys are out of Sully, Iowa, which is not that far from us.
No,
and
it's not.
This may be the first Iowa mead maker I've heard of, to be honest. So,
really, really nice guy. Very proud of his meads and has every right to be, believe me. I mean, I tried his elderberry, I tried his blackberry, I tried his apple. His apple is so good.
Yeah, I mean, elderberry and blackberry are both, you know, usually pretty good meads in the first place. So, blood orange, though. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I actually specifically asked him, which one should I take to our podcast? And he said, this one.
I think, good call.
Yeah,
I
mean, good call. No argument.
So, when you make an orange mead,
yes.
As a kid, when I got sick with respiratory or cold or flu kind of stuff,
yeah,
I got orange flavor Triaminic.
Oh, wow. Here's this flavor that I'm jealous.
My problem with a lot of orange meats is that you get the orange flavor that is not exactly true orange flavor. It's kind of a medicinally orange flavor. And you get sweet flavor. And you mix sweet and medicinally orange, and what you get is Triaminic.
Wow.
You get orange Triaminic flavor mead, which is not good. This is not Triaminic mead.
No, this is just a good blood orange mead. I mean, have you ever ate a blood orange?
Yeah.
You know exactly the flavor I'm talking about. And you get it in this.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't, Get some Van Wyck and try a blood orange meat, and you'll know what you're going to get when you get to the fruit.
Yeah, this is very true to the fruit itself. I would even go as far as to say for an 11%, it's a little bit light in terms of body. And that could just be the citrus and the acid to it. But yeah, no, this is really nice. I can understand why he wanted to have us drink this.
So, yeah, he was, like I said, super nice people. Give him a call. Look him up online. It's Van W-I-J-K and for Van Wyck. And, you know, tell him Meat House sent you.
Looks like you can go to www.vanwyckwinery. That's VanwyckWinery.com. And look up their stuff there too.
Yeah, there you go. But we're talking about orange apparently. Because that's, you know, other than the Starred Reserves we just had a little bit ago, we're talking about Jeff's Modern Orange Mead. You know?
And this is a
combination of your experience when making an orange mead.
Yes, and we're going to talk about making meads fast, and we're going to talk about the way that we do that, which is Kvike. But, you know, before we get into the Kvikes, there are a few different meads that can ferment at higher temperatures. The trick to this, the understanding to this, is if you want to make a mead quickly, you need to ferment at a higher temperature. So summer is the time to do that.
Because
it is naturally higher temperature out. And there are some strains, like K1V116 is one of my favorites generally, because it will ferment fairly cleanly, up to like 75 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's pretty warm for me, for a yeast.
Right, and me as a cheapskate, that's about where I set my thermostat in the height of summer. Because I don't want to pay an arm and a leg, and I still end up paying an arm and a leg because electric bill is out of control.
Yeah, well, you know.
It is, but
we like being comfortable.
Sacrifices you have to make, right?
I know.
So, yeah, K1V116 was for a very long time. It's a nice summer mead because it also plays very well with lighter fruits like apples and pears and things like that, I found. But it will ferment at a fairly high temperature without throwing off flavors. And then Kvike came along.
You told me a little bit about Kvike here.
Kvike, yeah, is weird stuff. This strain of yeast strain, this family of yeast, I guess, have been separate from like the greater cultural sphere of the yeast that we have cultured for beer and wine and blah, 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 blah. It is, to my knowledge, still a Saccharomyces cerevisiae, kind of an ale and wine yeast strain, but this has been used in farmhouse brewing in these little remote villages in Norway for the longest time.
So hats off to Norway so far, because what you told me about the part that got me about the Kvike yeast is it has such a high temperature that it can produce at.
It has a wide temperature range, and at lower temperatures, it will ferment pretty clearly. At higher temperatures, you get all these weird, fun flavors, depending on which strain of Kvike you're looking at. Different labs have different strains of Kvike available, and even Lallemand, I forget what they call their beer yeast. This is technically a beer yeast, right? Even they have my favorite.
Okay.
Which is Voss. Voss is what we're going to be using later to make Jeff's Modern Orange Mead.
Okay.
This is the same one that I talked about several episodes back where I had sent in a mead I had made with this and some Pilsner grains, and they accused me of putting oranges and not declaring it into the mead.
Like, and no, you did not put oranges in.
This is just the yeast. This is just the yeast preventing the high temperature.
So just the yeast itself is going to give you a more orange flavor in your mead.
The cool thing about these yeasts is that there are all kinds of different strains. And if you really, really want to get deep into it, you can find amateur yeast collectors that have slanted and gotten petri dishes of these guys growing and shared all over the place. If you want to be easy about it, probably the guys that introduced me to Kvike are the ones that I would suggest you go to. That's Omega Yeast. And they have a few different strains of those available right now, right available at Box of Barleycorn or any homebrew store that you want to go to, probably. Voss Kvike is my favorite. It throws citrusy orange notes at high temperatures. I love it. It's my favorite. It plays nicely with so many other flavors that I think is just fantastic. And I kid you not, we were talking about making session meads or making meads quick. Mm-hmm. And at a presentation I was asked to do at Bacchus, I brought in a hibiscus and lime carbonated session mead that I had made in 9 days with a boss.
What was the percentage?
Around 8 to 10.
That's impressive.
Here's the thing. I made it in 9 days. One of those days was for carbonation, and one of those days was for flavoring with lime and hibiscus.
So you made it in 7 days?
Yeah.
Whoa, okay. I didn't know you could do that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Here's the thing. These guys are nutrient hogs. You will use easily 4 or 5 times the amount of nutrient you would use for a basic Lallemand wine yeast.
Okay, explain again what nutrients are you using with this.
We're talking about Fermate O, Fermate K. So yeah. When we get to Jeff's Modern Orange, you're going to see a spike in the nutrient requirement, and I will highlight that further. But Voss is my favorite. They have so many other options here. Espy, for example, has like tropical fruit and mango and like the you know, the fruit cup, like fruit. It's those kind of flavors.
I wanted to do a tropical mead. That sounds like something I want to use for that tropical mead.
Espy could be your goal. Hornadal has kind of like a pineapple and stone fruit kind of vibe to it.
Nice.
Hothead, which was my buddy Ryan's favorite, if I recall right, has like an overripe mango flavor to it.
I'm not sure what that would taste like, but it sounds interesting.
Right. It sounds pleasant at the very least. Yeah. Right? Lutra was one of their kind of their groundbreakers because that one, it doesn't have a flavor, even if you're fermenting it at 95 degrees.
So what is the top temperature these things ferment at safely?
Basically, I have had mine up to about 110.
And it still didn't have any off green flavors or anything like that.
Right. And if you go much above 110, you're basically killing it.
Okay. I know yeast generally has killed it at like 120.
Right. You're starting to kill it at a little bit above 110. I don't have the best fermentation temperature monitoring gear. So I was.
I have a sticker inside of my bucket. So that's all I got.
I think I had for the life of me, I don't remember it, but it's a little Bluetooth thermometer, hydrometer kind of monitoring thing you stick in there.
And we will talk about that later. I got a friend of mine named Daryl who does that. He has a Wi-Fi hydrometer he leaves in the vat.
Mm-hmm. I've got a couple of those. I've got a, somewhere or another, I've got a little Android, or not Android, Raspberry Pi. Set up to monitor those. I just haven't got those implemented yet, and I need to because it's such cool tech, but, you know, is what is. Anyway.
So what was the neutral one again?
Lutra is the neutral one. That kind of took the beer world by storm because when you make a very neutrally fermenting ale yeast, that opens up fake lager like crazy. Because lager, if you think about it, I know you don't drink very much beer, but lager yeasts have to be very clean fermenting. They have a little bit of the beer flavor, a little bit of hop flavor, but they are very clean, very mellow beers in general. And it's kind of hard to do that without using a lager yeast, which is different than an ale yeast or a wine yeast, in that they need to be fermented at a lower temperature. Generally, we're talking like 45 to 60.
That's low.
So you're usually fermenting those in a refrigerator.
Okay.
For an extended period of time, sometimes 3 to 4 months.
Okay.
This lets you turn a 6 to 7% beer in like 2 weeks easily, including carbonation.
This ferment really fast.
Really fast. Yeah.
Ideal for summer, getting a summer brew going.
That's why we're talking about this right now. Because this is, we're getting into, hey, you know, honestly, what I did. And I made that 9 day hibiscus and lime. I took my gallon fermenter, wrapped it in a towel so it didn't get too much sunlight exposure, and I just sat it on my back deck at the height of summer in 95 degree weather and let it ride.
And it didn't have any off flavor of the esters in there?
Didn't, no. In fact, it played real nice with the lime.
Wow. That's amazing. I was unaware that there was a yeast hub that could go that high up.
It is such a cheat code that, you know, I don't mind telling people about this more often because you should know about this. It's amazing.
You realize how much more meat I could make at that rate?
Yeah. Here's the trouble. I mean, bear in mind this is an ale yeast. I forget exactly how high their alcohol cutoff is, but I think it's maybe 10 to 12.
Not so a problem with that.
Not the most alcoholic mead you can make, but it's damn good mead. And, you know, there are a few off flavors you can throw from these guys that are not widely, they're not widely perceptible. Jackie over at Box and Barleycorn, the actual owner of Box and Barleycorn, who is originally retired and has moved to, I think he's in Florida with his grandkids, enjoying, you know, being retired and stuff like that. Good for him.
Yeah,
oh, man. Yeah, he can apparently taste some kind of an off flavor with this that I can't. Very few people I know can, but it's some people get it, some people don't. Kind of the nature of some of these weird off flavors.
Yeah. Okay. But for the most part, it's clean. Even at 95 degrees, 110 degrees, 100 degrees.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
That blows me away. It really does. Because, I mean, how often have I heard, got to keep it cool, got to keep it in range.
Gotta, right.
You know,
D47, you got to keep it under 68 or you're going to get off flavors, man.
Yeah.
And even keeping it under 68 in a house outside of the winter months, kind of tough.
Right? It's hard.
You got to... Even in the winter, you got to stick it in your basement in the coldest part and kind of hope
next to the back door, you know, right,
yeah,
hoping
yeah,
to get some draft. Holy cow. But, you know, this stuff is, when did this stuff come out? You have any idea?
I want to say about 4 or 5 years ago is when they first brought it to market. It was maybe 5 or 6 now that I'm thinking about it. Ryan, my former co-host, got in touch with them and got us to send the first three that they brought to market, which was the Hordedal, the Hothead, and the Voss.
And the Hordedal is one of the tropical fruit.
The Hordedal is pineapple and stone fruit. The tropical fruit is the Espy. That came a little bit later. The Hothead is the overripe mango. Voss is the orange.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Ryan enjoyed the Hothead, I think, more than anything. I enjoyed the Voss like crazy. I forget JD's preference. I think it might have been the Hothead as well. But yeah, these are wild for use in mead. And oh my God, if you've not tried these, highly recommend. They are getting more and more accessible as more and more people are picking up like Omega for yeast, their homebrew stores, and they're pretty widely available online as well now
too. And honestly, I went to Bacchus just a couple days ago,
mm-hmm.
and they said, you know, he's got the Quebec set. Yeah, I know you haven't tried those, and he actually knows I haven't tried those yet.
Bastard. At this point, it's kind of a rite of passage for a mead maker to try some, you know, make a 10 or so percent fike in the height of summer and get you some tropical fruit fungi going.
So, and that's what I'm going to be doing now because, you know, God forbid I don't accept a challenge, you know. But wow, I mean, and thanks to Norway. I mean, you said that earlier, but I didn't realize how big of a deal that would be.
It's kind of a game changer because, again, this is Saccharomyces cerevisiae. This is the same kind of yeast that we're using for wine and ale and stuff like that. And it's just been taken in this weird sideways direction in these little communities. They've been trading it and kind of like the as I understand it, like your family yeast strain is almost like a it's part of your identity.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, my dad died in my infancy, so my uncle taught me how to brew with his strain and things like that. And it's, you know, I would love to be in that kind of community, but I'm glad we get to, you know, pick and choose all the different
strains
at the same time.
I mean, I'm really glad they brought it in because, I mean, I'll be honest, I don't mind waiting 2 to 3 or 4 months to get my mead made well. Mm-hmm. If I get that mead made faster, I'm not going to say boo.
Right. Well, and, you know, we're talking, this is what, early part of June now. And like, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago, randomly, early to mid-May, I am extremely fortunate in that I've spent the last 5 years working from home. And so most of my workday, I spend on my back deck watching my chickens and my dogs run around the yard while I'm working.
Mm-hmm.
And getting that
must be rough.
That sunlight and that vitamin D that tries to stave off depression as much as it can and doesn't always succeed, but by God, it tries. I got up to about, you know, 2, 3 in the afternoon towards the end of my workday. I was like, oh, it's sweltering out here. It's hot. I need to put the coffee away and just get some water. Oh, I'm getting dehydrated. I looked at the outside temperature. It's already 87 degrees. Like, no, we're rapidly getting to the point where we can ferment outside real easy. We're the height of summer where it's not just the hottest part of the day is in that, you know, high 90s, but we get into like mid 80s in the evening. Oh, yeah, that's where quake shines, and quake requires very little. The other thing you can do, though, any time of the year, get you a sous vide stick. Get you a basic tub from Home Depot or whatever that your fermenter can fit in.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. You can set it to 95 degrees, 100 degrees, 105 degrees, 110 degrees, whatever your electric bill can handle.
As much as you can afford.
And you can get that guy going, and you can get that fermenting at a fairly high temperature at a fairly rapid rate. Again, you're going to pay for the electricity to get that going. You're going to pay for nutrients, because this is a nutrient hog yeast. But the results were fantastic. They taste so good, and they are ready so fast. Like, you could really be turning stuff around quickly with this, as long as you're not looking for, you know, that higher APV wine strength stuff. Wow.
Now, well, I look for flavor in my mead, so that's not the big
deal. Sure.
The big deal here is, okay, as a survivor of doing banana mead, and we've gone over that even last week, how much do you need a blowout tube for this, or is a standard airlock good enough?
So most of the stuff that I've made with Pike has been like a traditional, at least a traditional in primary, and then I added extra stuff in secondary. Off tube has not been necessary, but it has been an energetic ferment.
Okay.
If you're doing banana in primary, I would absolutely put a blow off tube on that.
Or, well, if I'm doing a melomel, I mean, any fruit.
It really depends on the fruit.
No, cherry. No, the standard cherry, blueberry.
Use good caution. With cherries and blueberries and things like that, you're getting proteins from the fruit skins, especially. And those can make more durable bubbles that build up, and you get that, the necessity of the blow-off tube. So it's probably not a bad idea. Yeah. I don't know for certain whether it's necessary, but it's a good idea.
It's still like a 7-day ferment to get where you want to go for the most part.
7 to 14, yeah. I think 7 is exceptional. That was the height of summer.
But wow. I mean, I am shook. I mean, I don't know if I made that clear, but I am kind of shook by that time frame.
Right, and that's like an 8 to 10% that went under 1000 when it was finished. And then I back sweetened and flavored with stuff like lime zest and hibiscus.
Wow, that's...
I carbonated this so damn fast that I didn't even use a keg to carbonate it. I got some 2-liter bottles and like the stainless steel carbonation caps that replaced the little like twist off lids for carbon.
Yeah.
For the 2-liter bottles. And I just carbonated it with those in basically a gallon ish of this mead, filled 2 2-liter bottles, 3/4 of the way each, carbonated those up, took those to a talk I was doing about making meads fast, and took nothing but the empty bottles and the caps home.
Okay. I mean, going to that talk, you know they're going to be picky about that. That's that's good. That's clean mead. So, okay, I'm impressed. So, we're talking about Vec. All right. We've talked about Vec and how fast it can actually help us get us bike.
And I might be saying Vec wrong, too. Somebody very helpfully at one point tried to tell me, oh, you say it like Nike.
Kike? Kike? Okay.
And do you say it like Americans say Nike, which is wrong?
Yeah.
Because it is apparently pronounced Nike. So is it Kike? Is it Kvik? Kike? I have no idea.
Okay.
But Kike sounds right to me.
And Kike is how it's spelled.
K-V-I-E-K.
K-V-I-E-K.
Kike. I guess.
If you go to your brewery, say Vike, Vik, Nike, whatever, they'll probably get the hint.
Give me the good stuff from Omega.
Yeah, good stuff from Omega. That Norwegian, the premium Norwegian stuff.
Well, and Omega has been experimenting with this stuff really in really interesting ways lately, too, that I'm curious to see more of. They've got a strain of the Voss called Vossa Nova, which is thiolized.
I don't know what that means.
Thiols are, they are one of the flavor components of what makes hops like hoppy. Okay. So you get some of those. Bitters. Not exactly bitters, but they're the weird, especially fun tropical fruit notes you get in like the New Zealand hops.
Okay.
So that can include things like, where was that? So they're saying at like more moderate temperatures, not the extremes that I'm advocating here, you get more of these thiol contents, but these can be something in the neighborhood of like the citrusy notes or intense kind of tropical fruit notes and things like that, that if you enjoy New Zealand hops like Mutekas and the strains like that, those can be kind of ubiquitous towards.
Okay.
That's really cool. The other one they've got right now that is, last I saw, they just released this for the commercial market. It's not even at the homebrew level yet, but I'm honestly hoping that they'll start experimenting with this on the homebrew scale too. They've got one called Tartango, which is, they took Voss Quake and they have added the crossed it with something that produces its own lactic acid strain. When you're talking about making sour beers, usually there is a bacterial infection involved.
Okay.
That produces lactic acid to make it sour.
Right? Okay, gotcha.
And apparently this yeast strain has been crossbred to be able to make lactic acid of itself. So it is a single ferment and lactic acid souring yeast that's like one and done.
And that's cool.
You know, are sour beers fun? I mean, we talk about acid being part of the table, acid as the dominant note.
Yeah,
okay. It's real easy to back sweeten a mead compared to a beer, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Having more honey.
Dead easy.
So I want to play with this.
Well, now we're going to have to. And wow, I mean, that's obviously, you're very passionate about this strain, and you really are. You've seen a lot of really good results with this strain.
I've had so much fun with this, and you know, the
no shame, man. That's cool.
Prior to Pike being released, there was a lot of, I don't want to say gatekeeping, but kind of like gatekeeping in the community, where if you didn't have the budget to afford temperature control to lower the temperature of your ferment to where it was consistently below 68 degrees, then you were kind of like second class in some of the mead making community, and like your beads just won't be as good, talk down to kind of stuff. This strain to me really
leveled the field.
Mm-hmm. It equalized stuff, because hey, sometimes now you want hotter than room temperature. You want
summer
instantly 95 to 100. Yeah.
Now, and we so rarely even. We're in the Midwest, so we so rarely get above 110 around here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, the back porch is your new meat station.
Exactly. You know, the only, like, caution I would throw out here is, remember, you know, you've got, this is a yeast colony. So the bigger fermentation vessel you've got, the bigger colony you've got. And the process of metabolizing, English, Jeff, you are a linguist, for God's sakes. That process generates its own heat in small amounts, right? So if it gets really going, it may be a couple degrees in the core of that fermenter above ambient temperature. And if you're at, you know, 105 degrees, you may have the core of that at 108, at which point some of those yeast may be dying. That's something to watch out for, especially if you're wrapping it up in a towel to prevent, like, sunlight intrusion, which you probably should, because you don't necessarily like sunlight exposure.
Yeah, you know, a sunshade will do the trick. An awning, that could help.
You want to prevent UV from getting in, okay, best you can. So, yeah, no, but this is such a democratizing measure for the homebrew community in the ability to just make good mead, especially as quickly as it does and as nicely flavored as it does. It adds interesting notes to the mead by fermenting at a higher temperature, rather than, you know, it adding weird off flavors from fermenting at a higher temperature.
That's the part that gets me the best about this is, you know, most meads, if you get it too hot,
yeah,
you get the green vegetable, you get the wood, you get all these things that just taste bad.
Yeah, the hot alcohol kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, you're putting all this effort into a specific taste area, and the worst you got was extra orange flavor. Gee, that's nothing.
Right.
Yeah. That's nothing.
Right. So last week, I think it was, we talked about some of the weird things you can find in mead recipes online. And we talked about Joe's Ancient Orange. Joe's Ancient Orange has a kind of a place. It has a reason for existence because he wanted to show that you can make mead with stuff you can get at the supermarket. Not ideal. And it's been kind of copied to infinity and beyond.
But, you know, we can do better.
Right.
That the what you should say, what we're trying to say right now is we can do better than that.
To be completely transparent with everyone, I've never made a Joe's Ancient Orange, even though it is seen by many as a kind of a first step or a rite of passage for new mead makers, right?
Mm-hmm. After reading the list of ingredients after you talked last week, I'm not thrilled with the concept of making it because when I use zest from Fritistris, I use the zest, not the pith.
Mm-hmm.
And there's whole oranges in this thing.
Right.
You're going to get some bitters out of that I'm not going to like.
And probably not. So, from everything I've heard, though, Joe's Ancient Orange is the orange mead that tastes like Triminic, not like oranges. Not like this beautiful blood orange that we're getting dangerously close to finishing the bottle.
Dangerously close. Yeah, what's left of the bottle is in our glasses right now. To put that clear. No, I'm not going to be shh about that.
Don't narc on us.
This is a good mead.
So let's talk about making an orange mead that is knock your socks off orange, knock your socks off good, using our previous 12% recipe, because we're going to start right there. The 12% mead recipe that we released a couple weeks back,
mm-hmm.
We're going to start with that. We're going to make a couple little tweaks. First tweak, we're going to use orange blossom honey.
Okay.
Just a little orange flavor right up front.
Okay.
Why not? Right?
You know, and we've both had orange flavored honey mead.
Mm-hmm.
Two kinds from two different regions, yeah. And it makes a difference. Yeah. It really does.
Yeah. If you can source Mexican orange blossom,
do it.
Do it. If you can source Florida, okay.
It's still good.
Yeah. If you're stuck with California, you know,
I'm not going to be mad at you, but it's orange.
You want that little citrus note extra because why not? Right?
Yeah.
Any little extra bit helps. And then we're going to use Voskvike from Omega. But that's the yeast with that very pronounced orange flavor at a high temperature. Obviously, we're going to ferment this as hot as we can. If you're going to do this in the middle of August on your back deck, cool. If you're going to do what I was telling you about, you know, you get a tub and a sous vide stick and just find a little corner you can stick that in and leave it at 95 consistently. Cool.
Even better.
However you got to do it. You're not going to have the temperature ups and downs with the sous vide stick, but you're going to pay more for it. End of the day, you know, whatever. However you got to make it work.
Yeah. And if you keep it in the upper part of the tolerance, above 85,
mm-hmm.
You're going to be good, I think.
Right. Ideally, I find from my limited experimentation with this, maybe 6-ish batches, I've found in that 95 to 105 degree temperature range is pretty sweet spot for getting those good flavors you want.
Well, I lowballed it there then.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But 95 is better.
Like if we're in the middle of summer and your temperatures are like mid to low 80s at night, you're still going to get good stuff.
I love Minnesota. Well, I'm no shade to Minnesota. You're north of us. You're going to be a little bit cooler. I hope.
That said, you know, so many people in Minnesota have the saunas,
yeah,
in their backyards. I've heard of more than one of the guys we know up in Minnesota have been like, oh yeah, no, I just, you know, I set it in my shed or my sauna and left the sauna on.
Oh my gosh.
Like,
that just blows my mind a little bit. Anyway, so we're going to...
Right. So we're going to use Voskvike.
Voskvike.
Now, if you remember from our 12% mead recipe, we had 4 feedings of yeast nutrient.
Yes.
We were using 0.4 grams of Ferme-K per feeding.
Yes.
Remember when I said this is a nutrient hog?
You need to have 4 times that?
Well,
1.2?
More than 4 times that. Because 71B is low nutrient requirements. So we took that to 0.7.
Yeah.
Basically, we're just going to go 2 grams per feeding for a total of 8 grams.
That's a lot.
It's a nutrient hog.
It's a nutrient. We're gay.
Yeah. You're.
Yeah. Be ready with these feedings, because apparently if you don't have it at hand, you may be in a little bit of trouble.
When it's fermenting hot, it's eating a lot. It's needing a lot, apparently. The craziest thing is, it just runs out of nutrients so fast, and it will still slow out and stall down. Slow down. It will slow down and stall out if it doesn't have enough pretty goddamn quick, just because it's fermenting so hot and so energetically. I've found 4 times we were talking about the nutrient requirement. 71B, you take your nutrient need times 0.7, right? Mm-hmm. This is 4 times 4.
Mm-hmm.
Not 0.4, not 1, 4. And I'm kind of rounding up here a little bit, I think. But
a little extra nutrient is not going to hurt a thing.
No, it needs it. I've done 2 and thought that was excessive at the time. I'm like, no, it's still not getting enough. 4 is the sweet spot, I found from my experience.
Okay.
To be honest.
Good.
I mean, no one. The frustrating part about the math that I was doing is that the math really had only been done for nutrient requirements for wine-specific yeast, and I use a lot of ale-specific yeast in my fermenting. So I was kind of guessing and eyeballing that well before Kvai came out. And then Kvai came out, and I was like, shit, that's not enough nutrient? 2 times is not enough nutrient? 4 times is what it takes to get to dry?
Cool. Yeah. This is another reason why we use the nutrient that we use, because it's the Fermaid K.
Yep. If you switch to Fermaid O, that's then 4 grams.
Yeah.
Per feeding for a total of 16 grams.
Yeah.
Which is like a $5 package, I think.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, go to Fermaid K for this one. You know, if you like your O, that's cool. But if you want to make this, you better be ready.
Mm-hmm. You're feeding a lot here, so be aware. This is an energetic as all get out ferment that requires nutrient match.
So, okay. Now, when do we do these nutrients? When do we put these the feedings in?
So this is the same schedule essentially. Bear in mind, if we're doing a 12% with FOSS,
you can't necessarily get a 12%.
That. If you baby it, if you keep it hot, you can push pretty close, from my experience.
Okay.
Bear in mind, though, that our previous schedule for this is 12 to 24 hours 12 to 24 hours after airlock activity for that first feeding. That second feeding is 24 hours thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
Third feeding is 24 to 48 hours thereafter. Fourth feeding is at the 1/3 sugar break. We are making mead fast. We will probably hit the 1/3 sugar break at or around that second feeding.
So you're going to be dumping it almost daily.
If not every 12 hours.
Wow.
For
making mead, this is a scheduled event, because apparently you have to be on top of this. I mean, you know, doing mead in the way I've been doing it currently, without the Quebec Fike, if I'm a little late, there was really no harm, no foul. This, you better be there. You gotta be there.
I think you'll be okay. Watch. I think you'll be okay if you think of this as like, you know, realistically, instead of doing 4 2-gram additions, we could probably do a 4-gram addition within 12 hours of airlock activity, and then 24 to 48 hours, we can do another 4-gram and call that good. That's probably the smart way to do that, because it's going to chew through nutrient like all get out.
Yeah, it's working hard. It needs its food. Wow. I mean, that's mind-boggling to me, because I schedule my feedings. Don't get me wrong.
I had a joke that I made back in the day after doing a couple rounds of this spike. Like, when humanity is dead from nuclear war and cockroaches and potato bugs are the only things surviving on Earth, there's going to be a Kvike yeast strain that like just coagulates, knocks out King Cockroach, and says, "No, this bitch is mine."
Okay, then.
This is a survivor strain. Okay. It's been bred to be mean. And it works too.
Oh, well, what's that? Oh, what else we got to? Then after we do our feedings.
So, not even the feedings yet. When we pitch the yeast,
okay,
we're going to add a little extra for that orange flavor because we want a nice, round, and really pronounced orange flavor, right?
Yeah, of course.
So, per gallon, we're going to add half an ounce each of sweet orange peel and bitter orange peel.
Okay.
The sweet orange peel is going to be that pronounced kind of like we were talking about before. If you get like if you get that Grand Marnier or the other orange liqueurs for a margarita, you get that kind of bright, sweet orange flavor.
Yeah.
That's sweet orange peel is going to get you that flavor. Bitter orange peel is not going to taste like, despite the name, it's not going to taste bitter, per se, but it is that, it's a flavor that is more true to eating an orange. It's got the roundness of the bitterness and the fleshiness of the juice and stuff like that.
Okay.
So gotcha.
It's more like the pith with the juice.
Kind of, sort of, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I get
it,
that.
It rounds out that profile. We're going to add half an ounce of each. And if you're going a bigger dose, like you're going to make a 5 or 10 gallon batch out of this, you might scale that down to like a quarter ounce each. You may not find you need quite as much, but this is just in primary. This is just to get your some flavors going while everything else is hitting. Once we get to secondary, you need to taste this. You need to see if it's orangey enough for you. You could add more sweet orange peel at this point to get more of that flavor if you want to. Also,
If it tastes enough orange for you, keep going.
Yeah.
You need to add something else.
Yeah. If you need to add something else to get more orange flavor, I think a little bit of sweet orange peel here, another half an ounce maybe, or, you know, more or less, this is a kind of a taste and go kind of thing. I think that's the way to go.
And just because I feel like throwing this out there, when you're adding extra orange peel or any orange peel at all, use a bag.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Because you have to fish that out at some point.
Realistically, the first half ounce of each in primary, you should probably fish that out after a week or two if you're not already moving to secondary after a week, because it's quite
that fast. Wild. This is unbelievable. I've never heard of a meat this fast. I'm just sitting here. I've been doing it entirely slow.
Yeah.
I've been lethargic I've been like a sloth. So holy cow.
It's wild stuff, and oh my god. I think the best mead I ever made was a lavender blossom honey with some kveik yeast. For whatever reason, the two of those, like, wow.
Okay.
And it was that simple. It was just a lavender blossom traditional and kveik.
So, your feedings. What else? What we got next?
At this point, you know,
we add, if we need to, we add more sweet orange.
Right.
And we get these things at Bacchus, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If you're not close enough to Bacchus and you're not willing to chill out the like $3 an ounce or whatever for these spices, you could use the orange zest. It's not going to give you as pronounced a
use flavor. More.
Right. Use a little bit more. Use your best judgment and, you know, taste and go. Right.
But honestly, if you're going to do this recipe, be ready for it.
Then realistically, secondary is going to be pretty short because primary is really goddamn short. Right.
Yeah.
This could be done in a week. This could be week-ish. This could be done in 2 weeks, 3 weeks easily. Where do we want to go from here? If you have the ability to bottle carbonate, you might find that this is perfectly pleasant dry. Add a little extra honey or some corn sugar or whatever for
sweetness.
Yeah, then you can drop that in a bottle, let it continue fermenting for a week or two, and you've got a fermented orange mead. Very light, very pleasant. You may not like carbonated mead. You may find this is perfect just as is. You could stabilize it with metabisulfite and sorbate and back sweeten it with some orange blossom honey. And, you know, perfect orange mead right there.
That's now on my list of things I have to do next.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now that you taught me so much about the Quebec.
Kveik.
I can, damn, I'm going to get that about right after I get the MHP 10.
So in about 3 months.
Yeah.
Well, you're generous. you're optimistic there.
But super yeast, apparently, mm-hmm. You're gonna make an orange meat, and you got something like tropical and neutral, so you make almost any other.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, this is. I have been an orange fiend with Voss, but there are so many other options that are so much more, like any kind of tropical fruit you're interested in. Throw that the SB or with the tropical fruits or the ripe mango hothead uh-huh. at it. It's a win.
It's got to be a win. And you know, I'm looking at the neutral. I may try to, you know, my next batch of, I'm going to make a large batch of blackberry vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
I may try that to see if I can get it a little bit quicker.
Why not, right?
It's an experiment. I mean, if I lose, I'll cry a little bit for a day.
You're going to spend more on nutrient because it's going to be a nutrient hog, but.
So what?
If you're turning that primary from like a 3 or 4 week process to a 2 week process.
3 or 4 week. Month. My blackberry vanilla takes 2.5 to 3 months, man, minimum. Holy cow! If I turn into 2 week,
just in primary,
just or in is primary.
That, okay, well, I mean,
it's a slow burn on that one. I mean, I didn't realize how slow, but yeah.
I mean, realize we're putting this out in like summer heat, and so that's not going to be accessible, especially if you're making 10 gallons of it. But. It's a possibility.
I mean, I'm willing to try. I mean, the worst that could happen is I'm going to cry for a day. That's, mm-hmm. you know, I'll be out a little bit of money and I'll cry for a day. But I think I should give that a try.
Now, bear in mind, again, you know, we're 10%. Okay. 12%. We're pushing it. Your blackberry vanilla, if I remember right, is like that 14 to 15%.
It's actually 16 to 18.
Yeah. Okay. So you're not going to get it.
I'm not going to get that. I get that. I understand. But maybe I'll make a smaller batch of blackberry vanilla at a lower alcohol to see what happens. I'm not married to the alcohol level. I'm really not.
Fair.
Yeah. I'm married to a taste.
Like we were talking about last week, you could go to Costco and get you some frozen blackberries, put some in primary, put some in secondary, and just play with it a little.
Yeah.
Instead of using the usual like blackberry
vintner's
harvest.
Yeah.
Because it's iterate on a process and have some fun with it.
I mean, I'm looking for a tasty mead more than I'm looking for an alcoholic mead.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I want it above 10, but Voss will do that. I mean, the Quebec.
Kvike.
Kvike. That yeast will do that. And that's fine. I'm looking for, I mean, when somebody tastes says, oh, that's good. That's my biggest goal in my entire meat making life. It always has been.
Mm-hmm.
When people taste me and say, oh, I like that. That you cannot pay me enough money to have that much satisfaction.
Yeah.
Of them saying, that's good. I mean, I'm good. So yeah. You've kind of sold me on this the super yeast now.
To further oh, that's good. The first thing I tried this with, Kvike, I fermented a blueberry blossom honey mead at 90 degrees Fahrenheit on Voss Kvike. So blueberry blossom honey, Voss Kvike, that was it. Just a traditional.
Mm-hmm.
So it had the orange flavor, the flavor of the blueberry blossom, which is a little fruity.
It's just mild.
One of my wife's best friends still swears 6 years later, up and down, that mead was one of the best I've ever made.
Okay. Well, guys, you heard it here. I mean, apparently Kvike's entirely changed the game in this field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It has for the last 4 to 5 years.
If not more.
Yeah. If not more. But, you know, if you want to up your game or you just want to experiment like, you know, so many of us do. I mean, I don't just experiment, but I do a lot. And I'm going to experiment with this, too. But here we go, man. I mean, how many episodes ago did we talk about fortifying and trying these new flavors and
5 or 6, I think.
Yeah,
maybe? Something like that. Wait a minute.
Yeah. But you know, we are firmly exploring the rabbit hole.
Yeah,
and finding all the branches we can.
Maybe some gopher holes too while we're at it.
Yeah, I mean, why not? You know, I'm not prejudiced. I'll look at all the holes. But you know, oh my gosh! But that's such a cool thing to be able to make a mead in 1 to 2 weeks.
Yeah,
in 1 to 2 weeks. That's just if you would have told me that when I first started there, I would have slapped the beard off you, buddy. I mean, no way.
Had I told you that, would you have made any kind of mead other than the kind of mead you can make after a week?
No.
Right.
I would have done it. No, I mean, but there's just, it doesn't seem possible.
Right. Especially not like the basic, like, mead making process that we've all been steeped in for so long. This is such a cheat code that is above and beyond like any other cheat code.
This is completely game changing.
And it's wild. And the flavors are so, you know, I tried the hothead at hot temperatures. I tried the Horndal at high temperatures. They're not wrong. You get mango flavor. You get the stone fruit and pineapple flavor. It's just, I like the Voss the best.
That there. Okay, no name. That's all right. I mean, we've gone over how to make a fast mead in the summertime to enjoy in the summertime.
That's very flavorful and fruity.
Yeah. I mean, I love my fruit meads. Don't you know? I am firmly in the fruit mead camp. But, well, Jeff, I think we're going to wrap up the episode at just this really super high point.
Yeah.
And I'll talk to you next week.
Yeah. We'll see if we can throw out some more, you know, ideas for quick summer meads now that summer has officially hit.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I mean, it's going to be, we're like 3-4 weeks into summer, the summer now? I don't know when summer starts.
Yeah, no, I forget what summer starts, but I mean, we're in June.
Yeah, it's hot.
It's one of them summer months, right?
Yeah, it's hot. I stay inside because I burn like, you know, crazy. I mean, you know, I stay outside 20 minutes, I smell like Scottish bacon. So, anyway. Have a good day, Jeff. Nice to have you be around, meeting you with you here. Take care.
You too. Night all. We'll talk soon.